The way we take care of ourselves is ever evolving.
And what we know for sure is that our mind and spirit are linked to our physical body.
And that our wellness seems to extend into our communities and the planet we all share.
It is very, very clear that wellness is interconnected.
We love spending time with you to explore and practice the breakthroughs, the insights, and the passions of incredible people helping us all see the world in a whole new light.
This is HealthGig. Today's podcast is part two of our conversation with the great Siri Lindley, who's the author of the new book, Finding a Way. Part one was last week, so be sure to go back and listen to that before you listen to today, but you are in for a treat.
Siri Lindley, welcome to HealthGig.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
When we were reading this and listening and researching and loving it, it did seem like what you recognize is that life is changing, life is moving, life is going. So therefore, we are too. Can you talk about the transient and how important it is to realize that? And also with these different powers, you're right, we could go to different ones at different times in our life. So if you can expand on that.
Well, we all know we're constantly evolving. My evolution within myself that I'm so grateful for is this deeper understanding of who I am and what I need to feel happy and fulfilled in my life. Like there's this evolution because oftentimes, you know, in the beginning, we're being what people have told us we are. Like in the beginning, my mom was always like, oh, Siri's so shy. She never says a word. She's so shy. So for a long time, I was this shy little girl that never said much because that's what I'd been told I was. But as time went by, I just said, but is that really me? Or is that, you know, something that people said about me? And so this evolution into a greater and deeper understanding of who we are, deeper understanding of what matters most to us in our lives, and that can change. You know, someone graduating from college, what matters to them might be succeeding and climbing the ladder and learning new things. That may be the big driver for them. But when they're 60 and retiring, then it may become more about, you know, shared experiences and peacefulness. And there's no wrong or right. It's just honoring that and being open to how you are changing.
And knowing that we're multifaceted, we're not just one thing.
And that's the biggest thing. Yes.
When we talk about learning to love ourselves, finding out who you are allows us to love ourselves. Because I struggle with that a lot, love yourself first. And sometimes it's hard to love ourselves. I guess as we begin to find out who we are, it's easier to love.
That's so beautiful. And there is this like, we have to love ourselves. And it's like, oh, that feels weird. What if the greatest act of self-love was practicing self-inquiry? You know, who am I really? Minus the labels that have put on me. What if that were the greatest act of self-love? What if that was everything? What if you didn't need to do anything more than that? But you see, in doing that, in taking the time for self-inquiry, and that's what this book does a lot of, it's figuring
right
out what matters most to me and how do I feel loved by others? And in that, giving yourself that presence of just asking yourself these questions, getting to know yourself better, that is an act of love, isn't it? Without saying, you got to love yourself.
And then the byproduct is that you can love others much better.
Yeah, because think about when you fully know yourself, isn't the greatest gift of all when somebody gives you all of them? When somebody, you know that they're capable of being vulnerable, they're capable of being with you in good times and bad. When we love and I'm going to say love ourselves, but instead I'm going to replace that with when we get to truly know and honor ourselves for all that we are. And when we are courageous and brave enough to share the gift of all of who we are with another, that is a love that is deeper than any other love you could ever give. As you begin to honor and know thyself, lay witness to you and how you feel and what you're experiencing and what you need, you then are better able to give more of you to another, which then gives them permission to bring more of themselves to you. By letting all of our light shine, we give everyone else permission to do the same. And I think people, when I give keynotes around the world, basically, I get up there and I'm really vulnerable and I'm scared because here's this big crowd of people and I'm just basically feels like I'm getting naked in front of everyone, sharing my deepest, darkest. But I do that because we are all human. And I know that every single person in the crowd is going to resonate in some way with my fear, my self-doubt, my pain, the things that I've been through. Sometimes all we need to know is that we're not alone in those dark moments. We're not alone in that self-doubt. We're not alone in that fear. And just to know that you're not alone frees us. And that is part of my mission. If others see the possibility of themselves in me, wow, I can be scared. I can have self-doubt. I can fail over and over and over again and still have a great life. But how does that sit? Because the self-love is hard for people. And I think, I don't know if you two think a lot about the love languages, you know, the five love languages, the words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, physical touch, and gifts. And I always think, and I say this, you know, a lot of times people feel pain over what they didn't get from their parents growing up. I didn't get, you know, the attention, or I didn't get the love or the affirmation. Sometimes we go on, not wrongly so, we just don't have the tools to do anything different, is we go on like having that affect our relationships now, or feeling like we didn't get something that we needed so desperately. And what I always say is, give yourself all those things that you feel you didn't get. Give yourself those things. Give yourself that affirmation. Give yourself that acknowledgement or that love. Because you, what you've needed all along has been inside of you. And once you decide that, yeah, you know what? We have to know that you deserve that. You deserve to give yourself that love and acknowledgement. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, what do the people you love have to do to get your love? What do they have to do? Do they have to win the Nobel Peace Prize? Do they have to be perfect in every single moment? Because oftentimes, in order to love ourselves, we feel we have to achieve, you know, the highest accolade or be perfect in every moment. Otherwise, we don't deserve that love. But you love others. Do they have to be perfect? No. All the things that make the people you love worthy, I guarantee you that you do or have those same qualities. So you deserve that love as well.
That's something we all can do. Like, that's like, you've just taken it down to something kind of like, okay, that makes sense to me. That's something, as you do in your book, you give us the tools to kind of be able to take it and maybe try it out. But your chapter on the power of forgiveness, that topic forgiveness Dora and I were talking about this morning, it always comes up. But for you to lay there and think about what was important, can you talk about why on chapter 10, it's the power of forgiveness?
Forgiveness has changed my life in every way. You know, my father, who you both know, he was my everything. As a kid growing up, he was my idol. He was my hero. He came to every single game. He was just like my greatest source of love. And the most amazing guy, like, you know, I loved him so much. But when I found out I was gay as a 23-year-old and my dad found out, he was horrified. He basically at that point begged me to tell him that it wasn't true, this thing that he heard that I was gay. And I couldn't do that. I said, Dad, I'm gay, but I'm the same me. Please, please just love me anyway. And I remember on that phone call, he hung up the phone, and it was 2 years before I heard from him again. And you can imagine, you know, here is the love of your life. I mean, not in a weird way, the love of your life, who is rejecting me because of who I am. Like, because of who I am, I've lost a lifetime of love. Now, that is something that I must have had an idea that how I handle this is truly going to determine the whole rest of my life. Because if I decide, first of all, if I lied and said, no, I'm not gay, that's abandoning myself. And if I live the story that he's telling me, which is because of who you are, you will never be loved, you will never be successful, you will never be happy. Like, I wasn't willing to live that story. So I had to tell myself another story, one that I didn't believe, but I told myself and I would condition it until I did believe it. And that story was that because of who I am, I will have the greatest love, the love that I dream of. I will achieve everything I dream of achieving because I'm being me, and there's a power in being all of me and bringing all of me into this life. I didn't believe it in that moment because I've lost my everything. But I had to find a way to become the person that did believe in that. What would she do? You know, future me, the one that knows that being all of who she is going to have everything she dreams of, what would she do? Well, she would take on this impossible goal of wanting to become, you know, the best in the world in triathlon, even though she sucks. She doesn't know how to swim. She would find a love for herself by diving into something that felt so scary. She would find a respect for herself by showing up time after time, no matter how many times she failed. She's going to get back up again, and that is going to earn her own respect. She's going to value herself because she's going to see, you know, that she's making progress and she's backing herself and she's doing these things. So I had to become that person that did believe that because of who she is, she will live her best life. Anyhow, you know, what that led to is 8 years later, I mean, I had this why behind taking on this impossible dream, because the why was that I was desperate to prove to myself that even as a gay woman, I could achieve something that I thought was special, that I could make a difference in this world, that I could inspire other people, and most importantly, that I could be loved and that I could love myself. 8 years later, I actually achieved this impossible dream. Imagine if on the day when he called me, he said, "Oh, Siri, like somebody told me you're gay. My goodness, you're going to make the most fabulous gay woman." Like, what would that have done for my life? Like, what would I have gone on to do? It was when my wife and I started rescuing horses, and these horses have been treated horribly. Like, they've been beaten, starved, abandoned, all these horrible things. But within 1 week of us loving on them, feeding them consistently, being kind and soft with them, within 1 week, they forgive humans and they open themselves up to love and joy and a beautiful future. And I thought, God, we as humans don't do that, do we? We can hold on to the pain and the hurt for a lifetime. And what that does is it gives us an excuse. And I realized all the excuses I had had, you know, with relationships. Yeah, no one's ever going to love me, you know, and it's my dad's fault. You know, I'm never going to have the confidence. It's my dad's fault. When we blame, we become powerless to change. We have an excuse. Here's the thing, like, if we're going to blame the people that have hurt us for all the bad, all the pain, we also have to blame them for all the good. And this made me think, like, first I'm seeing the horses and how, like, they let go of all this pain and they're so happy and joyful and finding, accepting our love. And I thought, wow, you know, I think forgiveness is for me. If I forgive my dad, this is for me. It's not even for him, although it will free him too. So I called my dad. And this is also, Tony Robbins played a role in this and his teaching, so I want to honor that as well. But I called my dad and I said, "Dad, you absolutely broke my heart, but I forgive you and I actually want to thank you. I want to thank you for being exactly the father I needed you to be, to become the woman that I'm really proud to be today." And he was crying and he said how sorry he was. He'd been following my entire career. He listed off like all the races.
Of course he was.
I then said, "I need to ask for your forgiveness." Because what we forget often is our part in what happened. And what I forgot about is that after 2 years, he started calling me all the time. But I would take that opportunity to chop his head off and say, "You're the worst father and you've broken my heart and you rejected me and this." And I would just spew it all on him and hang up the phone. And he'd call again. I'd do it again, rip his head off. Would you want to keep calling me? Would you keep calling me? At some point, you're going to stop. And I said, Dad, I did the same thing to you that you had done to me. And you were trying to reconnect. You were trying to say you're sorry, and I wouldn't even hear it. So please, Dad, can you forgive me? And I needed to forgive myself because it was 25 years without my father. The minute we had this phone call, I mean, when I got sick, he called me every single day. And he has been the greatest support. You know, we have to understand that the things that we've done that we find unforgivable within ourselves, like, think about it. At the time, you did the best that you could with what you knew. You did the best that you could with the tools you had. And the people that have hurt you, they did the best that they could. My dad grew up in a family that was very close-minded. Like, that's all he knew. But now that he knows better, he does better, and he's the most wonderful father. So forgiveness is for you. It's going to set you free from the shackles, literally shackles of disempowerment and pain that's blame.
I think what I love about everything you've said in your book is that you really encourage people to take responsibility for their own lives. And this is almost sort of a handbook on how to do that.
Thank you, Daro, for recognizing that, because that's everything. Because life is up to us. You know, I suffered great anxiety growing up and into my 20s. And when I finally realized that life is up to me, it's all up to me. It's the first time in my life I ever felt totally in control. Like, this isn't a big responsibility that should scare you. It's a truth that should set you free because you are in control. Life is up to you. If you don't like the life that you're living, like, decide what story in life you want to live and let's take action in creating that for yourself because you can. So thank you for recognizing that, Daro. And I don't know, what do you two feel about that? Like, when you hear that, when the responsibility is all on you, how does that feel?
Well, as you said, it kind of calms you down a bit in the sense that this is actually up to me. I can decide today what this is going to be. And as you said, I also have that anxiety piece. I go more anxious. So this idea of being able to take this breath and go, I actually can make this decision. I'm not being forced, which comes with understanding that, wow, this is this one life I can live. You know, that idea, and then being in the present moment. It does. It gives you a pause. I've been addicted to taking my blood pressure. I feel like going to take it now to see if it's gone down. Because I got a new machine, you know, and I keep taking it. But it's true. It's like I can bring myself down if I choose to, and to make those decisions. Dora, what about you?
For me, it's so encouraging to remember that I do have responsibility for my life and that I can do things like stack my proof because, as Tricia knows, I tend to stack the doubt or tend to go the other way. Just focusing on the good is really helpful. I have no doubt that you're going to help millions of people with this book.
One last thing, Daro, and thank you both for that. In uncertain times, which come often, I mean, the world right now, it feels very uncertain to most everybody. When we know that we are in control of our lives, what I encourage everyone, each and every one of you to do, is to create your own certainty. That may seem hard, but it's not. It's super easy. I want you to take the time to think about what are the things that you do that you know make you feel strong, that you know give you energy, that you know bring you joy. What is your recipe? Because during my sickness and today and every day, what I strive to do is to give myself certainty every day by movement. Walking or running always makes me feel confident, makes me feel strong, makes me feel energized, brings me joy. So if I can make sure that every single day I'm doing that thing that gives me certainty, I'm certain it'll make me happy, I'm certain I'll feel strong, I'm certain it'll build my confidence, then I must do that every single day for me. I must do the things that help set me up to have the best day possible, to show up as the best version of me. And I know that each and every one of you knows what those things are. Write a list and then have it, you know, like a recipe in your cookbook. Have it as your recipe. If I want to create a better experience of life, then if I do these things every single day or a form of it, I will be certain that I'm doing everything I can to create the life I want to live. And it's a real simple thing to do. So what is your recipe? And let's give ourselves certainty every single day in those moments. And then the uncertain times won't feel so scary.
That's such a good way to put it. There's someone, you mentioned her, who's very special in your life. We don't want to end the podcast without talking about the love of your life, Beck. She's just lovely. Tell us about her and how you met and how she's changed your life.
My Beck, she is my everything. I mean, she's everything I dreamed of. You know, when you're like even 5, 6 years old and you dream of that love that's just fills you up and is everything you ever needed. I always dreamed of that as a kid. And then every relationship was just, I got hammered, cheated on and hammered. And I'd lost hope in that. I was coaching my athletes and I had a camp in Australia. I coached a lot of really high level Olympic athletes and Beck had asked me to coach her. I said yes. And I was very much a coach that was like, coaches don't, you know, they're not friends with their athletes. So this was very unexpected. And along the way, after about a year, I'll tell you this, I'll try and make this quick. An athlete of mine was setting up this camp in Australia. And I had said, I will not share with an athlete. So I don't care if it's a tent on the street, I'm not sharing with an athlete. But when I arrived, this athlete took me to this beautiful house on a beach and some Australian actor had offered up his house. And she said, the only problem is you have to share it with an athlete. And I'm like, nope, rather be like, put me in a motel. She said, let me just show you. There was an upstairs and there was a downstairs and only shared space was the kitchen. And I thought, no, I'm not doing it. And she said, well, it's Rebecca Keat. I didn't know Rebecca Keat really. I knew of her, but there was something that made it okay that it was Rebecca Keat. So I said, okay, we'll give it a try. That led to me knowing her like I didn't know any of my other athletes. And we realized over time that there were feelings there. So I had to address the whole team, the whole squad, and let them know what was happening and whether they wanted Rebecca to leave the squad. And they all said, oh my God, we're just so happy that you're happy. You're happy. So that's how she came into my life. But in that, you know, when you've had a lot of bad relationships, no matter what she did, it was so hard for me to trust her love. And that was our big challenge, was her saying, Siri, I've asked you to marry me. I've moved my entire life from Australia. Like, what do I need to do for you to know my love? And that was a big thing for me to honor and trust myself enough to go all in on this love and to honor and trust her love for me. And once I did that, it began, you know, the greatest love story of my life. She's never left my side and I feel so blessed. And my dad loves her. I think he loves her more than me sometimes, but it's all come full circle and it's really beautiful. And so for those of you that have had maybe a not so wonderful dating life or relationships in your life, trust that that one is out there. It may not be easy to let them in, but when you do, it's worth it. So be courageous and be brave if you feel like there's really something there. And together, we've created great things.
Yes. And talk about saving horses. Please.
Well, that was totally unexpected for both of us. I mean, I had never had horses. She grew up on a farm years and years ago in Australia, but I very randomly rescued a horse one day. And this horse, this is one of those unexpected teachers. And I am convinced that this girl came into my life. She came into my life 3 years before I got diagnosed. And in creating a bond with her and with building up my courage to ride her. And, you know, she's 1,200 pounds. She's this powerful beast. That courage, that strength I had to build up, that confidence I had to build up to create this relationship with her was kind of everything that I needed to feel that I could overcome leukemia. But when I saved her and she changed my life, I thought, what was I rescuing her from? Why did I need to rescue a horse? And that's when we saw this horrific video of what happens to at that time, 60,000 horses a year are slaughtered for human consumption, but it's not just like a quick death. It's 3 to 5 days of travel in overstocked stock trailers. Some horses break legs, die before they even get there. And then when they get to Mexico or Canada, they're dismembered alive. And it's the most horrific thing. So I saw this video, showed it to my wife. The next day, we created our nonprofit, Believe Ranch and Rescue, saved 5 horses. And since then, we've saved 301 horses. Most of whom have gone on, especially here at our ranch, to do equine therapy, helping people that have been through trauma, PTSD, veterans, kids with disabilities, cancer survivors, patients. They're true healers. They're beautiful, beautiful beings. And I think I'm a better person because of all the horses. So it's an honor and a privilege. That never would have happened without meeting Beck.
And one other person that's really important to you, among many, is your mom, right?
She's just my rock. She's that steady love. She is that beautiful example for me of the kind of person I want to be. Tony Robbins always says, picture yourself as an 80-year-old. And, you know, what you picture is kind of what you will become. And I love that I have my 80-year-old mom who hikes mountains and rides her bike. And it's like, she's my hero. And she's that beautiful example of the kindness, the love, the energy that I yearn to be. So I feel so blessed to have her as a beautiful example in my life. And I know the two of you are that as well, because I know the two of you. And I feel so blessed to have you as my friends and as these beautiful inspirations. But I just want to thank you. And I think maybe it was just, you know, growing up together in the same places in Kennebunkport, Maine, that gave us all this beautiful gift in life of beautiful people to look up to and to have as teachers and mentors and guides. And you two are that for me. My mom is that for me. And I just feel so deeply grateful.
You're that for us.
You are that for us. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Yes.
And we love your book, Finding
Yes,
a Way.
Yes, we hope everyone will get their hands on it, yes. Finding a Way.
I can't wait to share it with all of you. And please share if you read it and it's helped you in some way or transformed your life in some way, please share that. I love hearing how it's helped you. And I want to thank the two of you for putting it out there and getting it in more hands, because my whole purpose with this is to make a beautiful difference. So I hope to do that.
Thank you for joining us on Health Gig. We loved having you with us. We hope you'll tune in again next week. In the meantime, be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast and follow us on healthgigpod.com. I'm Tricia.
And I'm Doro.
Be well.